Chapter 5. Caria remained motionless, frozen with cold fury. Shards of armored glass tumbled around him, bouncing and skittering amid the tempest of the Stormbird's passing. Eventually, one of his squad managed to locate the bridge's atmospheric seals. The raging storm of oxygen cut out, leaving nothing but vacuum in its place. The last of the body parts and cogitator housings thudded silently back to the deck. He slowly let his sword arm relax. Haman walked over to him. The warrior looked as if he had barely taken a scratch, which was more or less how he looked after every contest.
"I expected more of them,"
he voxed over the internal channel. Cario drew in a long breath, then nodded. He stirred himself, sheathing his sabre.
"Aye," he agreed. "Why go to the trouble of taking these ships if not to keep them?"
He walked over to the few Auspex lenses that still functioned, arranged at the edge of the command throne platform. Tactical displays were still flickering across the dark screens, picking up the trail of the bulk carriers amid a swirl of war vessels. The general pattern was evident enough. The White Scars, heavily outnumbered and outfought, were pulling back to their frigates and making for the Mandeville Point. They had lost swathes of gunships in the withdrawal, but both warships had managed to stay intact. It was only as Caria watched the points of light slide across the crystal that the first twinge of unease struck him.
"These haulers were powering for warp jump," he murmured, remembering his opponent's words.
Haman nodded.
"I sent for rain to deactivate the sequence."
The beat of the engines had been growing in volume ever since they had arrived on the bulk carrier. Towards the end, it had sounded like no preparatory sequence he had ever heard. Now, in the vacuum, it was impossible to gauge if it had kept on rising.
"Why go to the trouble of taking these ships?"
He turned on his heel, staring back up through the broken jaws of the observation dome. The vast hulls of the other bulk carriers were still visible, barely touched by the extreme violence unleashed about them. The Emperor's children were on every bridge. The battles to reach them had been swift,
if not to keep them.
Cario started moving. Six members of the boarding party still lived.
"All with me," he commanded. "Contact Vorain. Get him back up here."
The squad followed immediately, and they began to move swiftly back the way they had come. As they passed through the atmosphere seals at the rear of the bridge and back into the pressurized zones, the whine of the engine surged back into hearing. It was deafening and throttled like a mad beast caged in the depths and raging for release.
"Priority signal. All kill squads, withdraw. Withdraw to the void."
He started to run. As he did so, Vorain emerged from one of the many side chambers and joined them in the sprint.
"How long?" asked Cario.
"Seconds," replied Vorain calmly.
Cario cursed. They were a long way from the hangars, and in any case, the White Scars would not have left their boarding craft waiting there to be taken. They would have been either retrieved already or destroyed. He ran harder, picturing the path he had taken to get to the bridge, recalling every aspect of it.
There would be savior pods close by for the bridge crew.
As he went, the floor shuddered. The noise of the engines transmuted from a throaty grind into something akin to a shriek resounding from the high chamber ceiling. Caria reached an intersection with a transverse corridor, one leading right along the path he had taken to reach the bridge, the other leading left into unknown regions. He went left. As he did so, the first explosion went off, smashing the walls in behind them. Aurelius was caught in the blast and crushed between two colliding wall sections. The rest of them picked up speed, racing along the imploding corridors as flames spurted from between blown clear panels. Echoing booms rang out, overlapping with one another. Cario had an uncomfortable image of all those munitions nestled deep in the holds.
"Save your pod arrays," reported Vorain.
As soon as the words had left his lips, the ceiling above him collapsed, smashed downwards by a bloom of fiery plasma. He and three others were lost in the wreckage, sent plunging down into the ship's depths as the floor dissolved into burning flotsam. Cario and Haman alone now could only attempt to outsprint the engulfing carnage, racing to stay ahead of the rolling tide of destruction. Beams snapped and bent, hazy amid the shake of extreme heat. The inferno surged after them, snapping at their heels. They broke into a narrow chamber marked by a long row of capsules embedded in the far wall. Most were smashed, either by the explosions taking place all round them, or perhaps by those who had primed the engines to cycle so wildly out of control. Kario and Haman sped along the row, scanning for intact units. By the time they reached the end of the series, it was clear what remained. A single, one-man pod, already burnished with the first flickers of flame. In a few seconds, as the ship entered the last stages of meltdown, it too would be gone. Kario snatched a quick look at his fellow warrior. Haman drew his sword and placed it in the fraternity's salute position.
"Children of the Emperor," he said dryly.
Kario returned the salute.
"Death to his foes."
Then he was scrambling through the pod's airlock and activating the docking clamps. From the outside, even as the bulk carrier's environment was turning into liquid fire, Haman worked to prime the release locks manually, ensuring a clean escape for his prefector. Kario pulled the restraint chains about him, activated the blast sequence, and sent the launch command. The pod's engines kicked into life, flooding the chamber behind him with plasma. Kario thought, for a microsecond, that he heard Haman's cries of agony before the hull plate doors slammed open and the pod was hurled into the void. The speed was crushing, as fast as a boarding torpedo, but less controlled. For a few seconds, Kario was completely disorientated as the tiny ball of adamantium flew crazily into the abyss. Through the circular real view portal, he had fleeting impressions of huge fires wheeling the void, broken by the silhouettes of broken warships. Slowly, he brought the spin under control, using the pod's scarcely functional thruster array. He took a deep breath, trying to get his bearings. A vast wall of rust-red metal ran away from him, rapidly shrinking, as the pod powered clear of its old housings. He saw the icons of the Memnos Combine and the marks of old Imperial shipping lane guilds, all punctured by pinpoints of leaking plasma. Then, the Tercephalion exploded. The impact was immediate, a rolling wave of immolated metal racing out from the epicenter, blocking out all else in a vortex of spinning debris. Kario had time to brace himself against the restraint cage before the bow wave smashed into the pod, sending it careening again, buffeted between searing plumes of superheated gases. Though Kario could not have known it, every bulk carrier in the convoy had been rigged to explode at the same moment, turning the entire train of massive vessels into miniature suns. Space itself seemed to ignite, to rage, to transmute into a burgeoning storm of heat and light and tearing speed. All he could see through the wheeling real view were tumbling masses of red and orange. The cargo ships had been enormous, far bigger even than the mightiest Legion battleships, and their death throes were like the ending of worlds. By the time the worst of the tumult had blown itself out, Kario's pod had been hurled far from the core of the battlesphere, its viewers cracked and its thrusters burned out. Though its heavy plating had absorbed the worst of the shockwaves, warning runes were already flickering along the inside of the narrow chamber, picking out the many ways in which the structure had been compromised.
"Suzerain,"
he voxed, wondering if the ship still lived. For a while, nothing but hissing answered the comburst. Then, after several more attempts, the link crackled open.
"We have your position, Prefector,"
came Harkian's voice.
Kario let his head sink heavily back against the metal collar of the inner cage.
"Status, what of the frigates?"
"One destroyed, the other damaged."
Kario smiled coldly. He knew that the steel-armored warrior would have made it back to the surviving one.
"What was its ident?"
"The Kaldian Lord."
"Did we retain any of the haulers?"
"Negative. 3 ships lost in the explosions. Casualty figures are still being..."
"Kaldian. Record the name, and tell every scryer we have to cast for its marker in the ether. Let it be known that there is a debt of honor to all fraternities that will only be satisfied by its destruction." Summon the apothecaries and tell them to devise agonies.
There was a hesitation at the other end. It will be done, Lord.
I will see him again, Kariel cried out loud, though no longer speaking to Harkian.
The savior pod rotated onwards, carried by momentum. He was intact. His blade was intact. The enemy had been bested, but not yet killed. That could not be allowed to remain the case. All things had to be made complete before he could give in to the whispers of the Legion's destiny. He half saw the many-horned vision of his dreams then, stronger now, lascivious, confident.
It would be strengthened by this, using every setback to make the case for sublimity.
Kario closed his eyes. He entered the combat meditation designed to drain his anger and restore the cool command of the duelist. He rehearsed what he had done and where he had erred, and determined to learn from it, to become more incisive, more controlled, ever more perfect. The pod rolled further out, spinning like a shell case into the violent abyss.
I will see him again, Kario said, knowing it to be true.
Sensation. Sensation. The rush, the swell, the gorge, the joy, the infinity of it. There were no words, no images, no possibility of explaining the fullness. All there was to live it, to let the flood rush into your veins and fill them with the fire that was pain and joy and forgetting. The pain never left. It ramped up. It became excruciating, so much so that his screams were real screams, let fly from shredded lips and birthed in bloody vocal cords. But that mattered not, for pain was what reminded him that he lived still, and the numb cold of the hereafter had been spited for another lifetime. Every breath he drew was testament to that. It vindicated him, made him greater, fueled the hell furnace that had been lit in his engorged, straining hearts. Eidolon waded into battle. Every sweep of the thunderhammer, every explosion as the metal head struck and slew, every recoil from the heavy shaft as it broke bone and armor, it all redounded into the melange of raw experience. And he wanted more. More! He crashed onwards, his vision a blur of colour, made jagged and hyper-exposed by the extreme inputs assailing his ravaged armour sensors. He could feel his mortal body operating far beyond its original Genhance tolerances. Fabius' stims were raging through his system now. They would one day kill him, if the enemy failed to, but he loved what they did to him all the same. This was the reward. The many thousand agonies of his new existence found their prize in these moments. Fulgrim had been no fool. He had been neither weak nor deluded. He had seen it before any of them had, the horizon of experience extending far beyond what the lies of unity had prepared them for. This was what humanity had been created to unlock, to remake itself, to grow, to take up the mantle of something better. If the darker fates were cruel, they were also the altars of creation, turning receptacles of poor flesh into vehicles for new and dynamic deities.
We are not degrading,
Eidolon thought, as the hammerhead whirled, ripping through the blown chest of a reeling White Scars legionary.
This is the perfection we were always denied.
Blood splashed across his helm lens, casting the world into filmy crimson. He could smell it in his flared nostrils, rich with hyperadrenaline, thick with nutrients, the matter of the false emperor's biotechnological genius.
We are improving this.
Eidolon laughed out loud, and the sound was enough to shatter glass and dent lead.
We are improving this.
He lurched onwards, grinning wide, overcome with a tide of emotion. Once unleashed, myriad sensory possibilities engulfed almost all else, and he had to fight to retain his grasp on the here and now. The wall of noise was ripping apart, torn like a great curtain. Something was opposing the cacophonic aura, blunting its edges and pushing it back. Eidolon blinked hard, forcing himself to regain self-mastery. He saw Terminator-plated warriors advancing towards him, flanked by warp weavers in bone-pale armor. He saw wild energies coursing through the blood vessels of those ones, glowing like phosphor in the dark.
"They are mighty,"
he noted, reminding himself not to be surprised. The white scars of shamans were powerful, like the rune readers of Fenris, only more honest.
"Go back!"
he screamed, and the world blazed from the glory of his death shriek. And yet, still they came on, weathering the hurricane of destruction that the psychosonic blast caused, leaning into it, shrouded in the arts of their strange magic and the physical majesty of their warplate. The greatest of those fighters wore a gold-crested dragon helm, which to Eidolon's swimming vision looked alive, its jaws snapping and its eyes blazing gold. That one, taller than all the others, fighting with a corona of beauty, weathered the sound tempest as if born to it, and his long, curved sword burned with reflected fires. Eidolon laughed. He was vaguely aware of his brethren charging headlong into contact, the two legion elites slamming into one another. Heavy armor clanged from the impact of pressed steel, and the air fizzed from raging etheric release. Wild magic exploded around them all, igniting as it impacted on the running waves of demon screams. His enemy waited for him, driving his curved blade through those who came against him with almost lazy perfection. There was something striking about those movements, a freedom none of the Chemos-born would ever have allowed themselves. Eidolon hefted his hammer, gauging distances through the fog of noise and color. Distorted tactical readings told him of the wider battle unfolding across the docks, whole squads burning, gunships downed, walkers annihilated. The onward drive had stalled. The assault was grinding into the mire of dug-in combat. This enemy could not take the keystone. For all their aggression, they had not come in sufficient numbers. It was only a matter of time before they were forced back. Eidolon smiled, feeling the skin of his lips crack.
"A brave attempt," he called out. "Yet you have lost your way here."
His enemy said nothing. Prayer banners lashed around his ivory battleplate as he whirled into the attack. So fast, so unfettered. They came together. Eidolon hauled his hammer head up to meet the incoming strike, and the two weapons smacked against one another. He reeled backwards, pursued by the fire-flecked blade. He screamed again, making the air shake, but the dragon helm pushed through it. Their weapons swung, smashing into one another again. This time, the impact hurt him. Eidolon fell back, his vision laced with dark veins. They traded more blows, earth-breaking blows, ones that smashed the decking up around them, dented the ancient armor, and made the burning atmosphere blister.
"You cannot escape through the Kalium Gate,"
Eidolon spat, tasting his own blood alongside that of those he had already killed.
"This door is closed to you."
Still no response. The dragon helm towered over him.
"Coil, hit, withdraw, coil again. He is astonishing."
Eidolon fell back, bludgeoned into retreat, even as his troops held their own ground. Perhaps then the assault had all been for this, to end him again, to deprive the Third Legion of its greatest tactical mind. Hammer and Tulwar smacked against one another, shivering from the hits, spraying disruptor discharge in all directions. Eidolon's bloated breastplate cracked, disgorging white noise freely from damaged amplifiers. He fell to one knee, watching as the dragon helm came to deliver the final blows. As the shadow of his enemy fell across him, Eidolon cracked a wry grin. To be slain by two Primarchs, how many could claim that honor? And yet, as the fire-streaked storm howled, augmented by the cries of the dead and the dying, rocked by the explosions of mortars and crack charges, the truth came to him suddenly.
"But you are not him,"
he said, clutching the thunderhammer tightly.
"You cannot be, or I would be dead already."
He shoved himself back to his feet, thrusting the hammer before him two-handed. The weapons crunched together again, flexing from the deadening, repeated punishment. This time, Eidolon's desperation made him stronger, and he forced his enemy back by a fraction. The race of sensations returned, as if rewarding him for the realization. Eidolon laughed again.
So, why did he send you? Do you not know who you fight against here?
His enemy redoubled his efforts, matching Eidolon's ensorcelled, stim-frenzied strokes with ferocious counters of his own. He was graceful in his speed, fighting with a looseness of limb that was almost Xenos-like in its manner.
You are but one of his champions,
rasped Eidolon, forcing his enemy back. He could half hear the growing volume of discord around him. The cacophony were forcing the Stormseers to cede ground, just as the Emperor's children all across the docks were recovering broken terrain. Eidolon launched a savage backhander across the Dragonhelm, catching the golden mask and sending the warrior staggering. He seized the initiative, hitting him again, smashing the hammerhead deep into ridged plate. The Tulwar bit deep on the counter, catching him on his leading arm and severing clean through Ceramite, but it didn't stop the furious assault. Eidolon jabbed upwards, connecting with the Dragonhelm's vox grill. The gold and ivory mask was sheared clean apart, ripping free from the face beneath. Eidolon lashed out with his free fist, crunching a bald gauntlet into his enemy's exposed face. More punches fell, a flurry of them, to his neck, his shoulders, his throat. He was fighting in the primordial way now, hands clenched, his raw strength unleashed. They grappled like beasts, and the Dragonhelm slipped at last, his boots dragged across the bloody decking. Eidolon leapt upon him like a leonine atop its prey, thrusting his masked face against the ruin of his enemies.
Bastard, Chogorian,
Eidolon whispered.
A wiser legion would have given up long ago.
For the first time, his enemies seemed to be trying to speak. Through his broken faceplate, the jagged scar running down his cheek was just visible. Eidolon lowered his face further.
What is it?
The words were lost, a hoarse whisper. Eidolon, losing patience, pressed his fingers against the naked throat and prepared to squeeze.
Know that the gate's path is destroyed,
Eidolon told him, speaking as softly as his augmetics allowed, watching thick blood pool over his purple glazed gauntlet.
Even if you had prevailed here, it would have been for naught. You cannot escape to Terra. All ways are watched. All ways are guarded.
Still, his enemy tried to speak. Eidolon squeezed harder, choking the life out of him.
You have failed here. Know this. You have failed.
And then, despite everything, the warrior spoke, forcing the words out through his broken jaw.
Kept,
he rasped. Intrigued, Eidolon relaxed the compression.
Ah, it kept.
Booms rang out, distant echoes of more destruction. The docks were being ripped apart berth by berth.
Say it,
hissed Eidolon, staying the killing strike for just a moment longer. The White Scars warrior managed to focus on him, clear brown eyes amid the ruins of a tight-skinned face, still unafraid, still with that infuriating serenity.
It kept you away from Herivale.
At that, Eidolon stood bolt upright, releasing his grip. He felt suddenly unsteady, as if the roar and echo in his ears had addled his mind. He knew that name. Or did he? The stims throbbed in his throat, making it hard to remember.
Herivale. A warrior? Another warp conduit? Yes. Yes, he did know it. A world. But Herivale surely was nothing. A planet they had conquered months ago. It was heavily garrisoned, secure and far from major warp routes. But he had been there. Assets had been drawn from the sector for the Memnos response, for the other raids, for this.
What is on Herivale?
he asked, crouching down again, half speaking to the downed warrior, half to himself. The blurs of colour swam before his eyes. He reached down for the warrior's neck again, intending to seize him, to haul him up. He was still alive. He could be shriven, given pain beyond mortal imagining. Even now, he could be made to talk. Just as Eidolon's fingers reached for the shattered gorget, though, a shockwave caught him, hurling him away and driving him bodily across the burning docks. His boots ground deep into the churned-up deck plates as he righted himself, and his thunderhammer's head kindled back into spark-laced life. He whirled back around, scanning for the source. Across the expanse of the smoke-clouded docks, the battle had tilted firmly in the Third Legion's favour. Whole formations of White Scar's legionaries were on the retreat, supported by heavy incoming fire from hovering gunship formations. The inner gates continued to blaze, but had not been taken. And more Emperor's Children tactical squads were on the march now, filing up out of the inner sanctums and onto the void berth level. A crimson-armoured psyker, a legion librarian, remained before him, holding position even as his battle brothers slowly pulled back. The librarian stood over the body of the downed dragon helm, his armoured outline crackling with black-edged silver, his feet planted firmly. "No," the newcomer said, "not for you." His voice was unlike the others, cultured, easy, with the Gothic words, a less pronounced Chogorian inflection. For a moment, Eidolon couldn't place it, before he finally put the armour's livery and its owner together.
"Unexpected," he murmured,
gathering up the energy for the death scream that would shatter the Thousand Suns legionary's armour and burn his body into fiery skin strips.
"I rather thought your kind were on our side."
The sorcerer carried no weapon, but his gauntlets fizzed with distortion, as if they were half immersed in another world. Even amid the fog of chemical stims, his power was plainly evident. A witch of Prospero, somehow transported from the ruins of his homeworld and fighting now amid bands of void barbarians.
"Make no claim on him," the sorcerer warned, "or your thread ends here."
Eidolon found himself smiling even before he started to move again. The death scream built up in his augmentation chambers, swelling in his chest and ready to spill into the ravaged atmospheric bubble.
"Ends again,"
he corrected him, drawing in the initial breath. But the sorcerer had already moved. The gesture was hard to track, as it had been conceived before any of them had spoken, prepared out of time, and now brought into the present, faster than thought. His shimmering gauntlets shot out wide, swirling with visual interference, sucking the light and form out of reality. Eidolon unlocked his throat just as everything exploded. He was flung high into the air, his head slammed back hard against his inner helm. He heard fresh roaring in his ears, the thunder of racing winds, before he crashed back to the deck 30 meters from where he'd been standing. Groggily, he lifted his head, scrabbling to gain purchase. He had lost his thunder hammer, and he could feel blood sloshing all across his carapace. His helm display crackled with a zigzag pattern of static, making the battlefield lurch and jump. He caught sight of the sorcerer one more time, now alone amid a circle of nothingness. The psychic blast had flattened a whole swathe of the battlefield, scattering the cacophony and turning adamantium plates into a landscape of smouldering scrap. Aftershock still pulsed out of his mind blast, radiating from his clenched fists like heartbeats. Eidolon tried to open his throat, but the resultant wet waves of sheer pain almost made him gag. He looked down to see the cascades of blood across his chest and saw just what a mess had been made of his pristine armour. Bare flesh glistened between jagged edges, pallid even by the light of the Promethean fires. Wincing, he pulled himself to his feet, just in time to see the sorcerer teleport away with his wounded charge, no doubt pulled back to the interior of one of the huge warships still holding close position in the void above the keystone.
All across the berthing zones, white scars formations were being lifted to safety by disciplined flights of landers, bolstered by a continual barrage from the numerous void fighters strafing the quays. Third Legion assets were responding, redeploying units and artillery to bring as many down as they could. They had some success, and their opponents' losses continued to be heavy, but it would not be enough to halt the withdrawal.
"This is what they do," Eidolon muttered to himself. "Never a solid target. They come, they go, like birds over carrion. But for what?"
Reports began to filter back to him as his armor systems reacted to the shock. He felt the combat stims dropping quickly now that the enemy had been snatched away. Kornanos was signalling. Von Kaldor was signalling. The hunters were straining at the leash, urging their master to give them leave to pursue the savages back into the void. Eidolon ignored it all. He looked out over the burning docks, up to where the supermassive bulk of the Keystone rose away in perfectly constructed curves. He could imagine the thousands of mortal souls, those under his command, those sworn to end him, all locked in movement and counter-movement. They had all been feints. The feints at Memnos had concealed nothing but more feints over Kalium. The Khan had shown his right hand, then his left, but still the blade was hidden. Eidolon licked his lips, barely noticing the flavor of his hyper-rich blood.
"And what, then, is on Erevale?"
he mused as the docks burned around him.
"What can he have seen there that I did not?"